Welcome back to News Talk 1370 WCOA Real News with Rick Outzen. It's 7:30 and it is getting warmer outside. The Sopranos, before Game of Thrones, before The Crown, before all the big Netflix and Prime and all the different series that they put together, it was Sopranos. And Sopranos is, it's difficult if you're just getting in now, the last few years, and watching it. I know a lot of times during the COVID that we ran out of shows to watch and we went to Sopranos because we just had to go back. And people, we've got a new movie coming out, a Sopranos movie. It is The Many Saints of Newark. But before we talk about that, we thought we need to talk about Sopranos. So I brought in a group that you listen to these people and they live Sopranos. We've got Troy Rafferty, Millard Fretland, and Cena Madison here. Guys, welcome to the show.
Morning.
Morning. Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Rick.
All right, let's start. You know, this show, what was the attraction of Sopranos for you?
Well, I think it was the attraction going all the way back to movies like The Godfather. There's this kind of obsession about, you know, organized crime and looking at Goodfellas and all these. And this was a modern take on it. I mean, they're in a, you know, they take this mob boss, Tony Soprano, and put him in the middle of a New Jersey suburb.
Right.
And he's facing a lot of the same problems that parents face, that fathers face.
And he's in sanitation. That's
right. A sanitation consultant.
Consultant, right. Cena, how about you? What attracted you to the series?
Well, it was interesting because initially I wasn't, you know, everybody kept trying to tell me, you know, you're going to love this. You're going to love this. I'm like, nah, I didn't really like The Godfather. I'm not, you know. And what I loved about it, it's almost Shakespearean. You know, there's so many elements of Shakespeare. You've got the anti-heroes. You've got the supernatural elements. And you've got those people that are marked for death, you know, just like in Shakespeare, that kind of drama. It's never been able to be done before, you know, because you never had time in a series before that to build up the characters to that level.
Millard, how about you? What drew you to it?
Well, I think that what drew me to it, Rick, was the same thing that attracted a lot of people. You know, is a character, a main character, Tony Soprano, who is a feudal lord. You know, he has ultimate power in his realm. What his word is law, and he's a very, very bad guy. He's an evil character, but he has a lot of human frailty as well. Thinking back on it, the last character like that I can recall was J.R. Ewing in Dallas. He was a very bad guy, but he was a lot slicker than Tony Soprano and a lot less violent. But I think that notion of ultimate power, lots of money, is appealing to a lot of people because not many people feel powerful and not many people have tons of money.
Well, I think the other thing that made Tony sort of click is that he starts with he's having panic attacks. So you have a mob boss having panic attacks and nobody should know about it. So he has to go to a psychologist to deal with it. Cena, you've talked about it before. You know, why this series hit? What was the marketing plan for HBO? Because you know, a lot of people, the networks, didn't want to do this show. It was too edgy for them. And in the beginning, not enough violence sometimes.
Well, it was really funny because I was just talking to all you guys about this because I couldn't sleep one night and I'm watching like Aaron Sorkin at 3 o'clock in the morning. It was an interview with him with the New York Times and they were talking about the West Wing and how they never could do a presidential show because it didn't test well. You had to make everything appeal to everyone before on network television. And finally, the West Wing sort of broke out of that. But he was telling the story about, you know, the reason the Sopranos worked is because HBO was able to do this because they didn't have to appeal to everyone. They just had to sell subscriptions. So if they won awards and got a lot of buzz, it didn't matter. Not everyone had to be happy with the show. So they were able to do a lot more with it. And that's what changed television, which I thought was an interesting take.
They had so many different characters, and at times it was hard to keep up with them. But once you got into the show, was there a character, Troy, that just stood out to you that you had to, you just loved to follow?
Well, I really like Sylvia. Yeah, I mean, he was a character. You know, everybody loves Tony. The character, I mean, he was a very bad guy.
We had Steven Van Zandt playing Sylvia.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I mean, he was such a character, and it was such an unbelievable casting job to put him in that role.
Right.
Because he just brought life to, you know, he had such a, the, his mannerisms, his demeanor, his imitations of the Godfather, you know, Corleone and the Godfather that they'd always have him do. It was just, he was one of my favorites.
Right. Well, you know, he always had the bandana for Bruce Springsteen, and all of a sudden he takes off in this direction. And he's one of, like, the grounding characters that reminds people of what the code is.
Exactly.
But, you know. How about it for you, Cena? Who jumps out at you as a character?
Oh, that's hard to say. That's hard to say. I was just thinking about Sylvia, one of my favorite lines, and I just have to say this because it's just – I was watching it the other night, the long-term parking, which is the one where Adriana dies. They Chrissy's really, really, really late. And he's sitting, Tony's sitting there with Silvio, and he finally comes in, and it's like, where the blankety blank were you? We've been waiting here. And he said, sorry, Tone, the highway's jammed with broken heroes and a last chance power drive. And Silvio just looks up and goes, okay. It was awesome, awesome. But I liked Chrissy just because Michael and Pilly.
Christopher.
Christopher. Speaking of that, I think Adriana was wonderful too, but I think Edie Falco is one of the greatest actresses of our generation. I mean, she was just incredible. So it's really hard to say.
Millard, how about you? Which one grabs you?
Well, I can't agree with Cena. I mean, the casting was so fantastic, and the characters were so rich, even the smallest characters. But I got to go with Paulie Walnuts.
Oh,
I mean, Paulie Walnuts had so many great lines, and he had such a straight line view of life. You know, it's right. Like, this is the way it's going to be. And the boss wants it this way, and that's it. You know, his great quote, you know, the boss says you're going to be Santa Claus, you're going to be Santa Claus.
I forgot about that.
Well, and Paulie was really, truly evil. I mean, he, Tony had that, you know, the psycho element to him. You could see the anger in his eyes. Paulie could go off in a heartbeat at things, you know.
Yeah, and I think he was the most truly sociopathic character in the show.
Right.
Or straight out psychopathic.
Yeah.
Probably.
All right, let's talk about episodes. Troy, the difficult thing with Sopranos, it is not G-rated script, so everybody is on their best behavior telling what they know.
Episode, I mean, really, if I got to go back and look at one particular episode, I would probably pick the college drop-off. It's early in the – it's like halfway through the first season, so you're still kind of getting to know who these, you know, characters really are. And him dropping his child off or going to look at colleges and then seeing the snitch and dropping her off and then going – and then the brutal violence of it all. And that's what I think what Cena was referring to earlier. It's like you're not used to seeing that, you know, on TV.
Right. And I think I remember David Chase talking about that scene because he said that he had done these certain amount of episodes and he's just this guy in therapy. And he's like, you know, I really got to do something awful here to remind everybody who this guy is. And that was one of the first shocking things, if not the first shocking thing Tony did.
I know one of the things that I read the Vanity Fair article that was brilliant about the series, but they talked about there were some mafia people that watched the show and had advice about – So what was some of the advice they gave about Tony?
The one that sticks out and was the best to me is when the mafia boss said, "Dons don't wear shorts." That's it. Because there was that scene in the backyard at the barbecue early on in the first season where he's grilling and Tony's got shorts on. And evidently that's Dons don't wear shorts.
The shorts went away.
The shorts went away.
I'll tell you what, let's take a break for commercial. And what we'll do is we'll come back, we'll get everybody's views on the episodes that really stood out to them, and talk about, everybody's got a different thought about the ending of the series, and then let's talk, we got to give you a preview of the movie, The Many Saints of Newark. We are News Talk 1370 WCOA, Real News with Rick Allison. We'll be back with more Sopranos. Welcome back to News Talk 1370 WCOA, Real News with Rick Outzen. It is 7:46 on Tuesday, September 28th. New movies coming out this weekend. It is The Many Saints of Newark. It's based on The Sopranos. It's sort of a prequel to The Sopranos series that was so popular on HBO. And we have brought in the Soprano connoisseurs. And we were talking about, as we went into the break, with me I've got Troy Rafferty, Cena Madison, and Millard Fretland. And Millard, what was your favorite episode?
Well, there's so many, but and there was a lot of sort of grim humor in the series, but the one that I actually laughed through the entire episode, and I can't remember the name of it, but it's the one where they have to go out, where Paulie Walnuts and Christopher have to kill this Russian guy that they don't...
The Pine Barrens.
The Pine Barrens. Yeah. And it's in the middle of the wintertime, and they don't know this guy is like a commando, so they can't kill this guy, and they end up losing the guy in the woods. They get stuck in a snowbank. They got no food. The car won't run, and their cell phones don't work, and it's just epic. And I just and the funniest part of it was at the end when the big heavy guy was sent to find them.
Bobby.
Yeah, Bobby. And he comes out dressed head to foot in brand new snow gear and camouflage with this big gun.
I have to do that line too, because Tony's calling them, telling them they got to get rid of this guy. This guy's a Russian Green Beret. He's killed 16 Chechens in one day, and he's an interior minister, and he's part of the interior ministry, and they've got this bad service, so Paulie hangs up and tells Chris, you know, he said, you're not going to believe this. This guy killed 16 Czechoslovakians. He's an interior decorator. And Chris says, well, you know, his house looked like.
The Paulie and Christopher, their moments, I mean, sometimes they were vicious. When Christopher was short on his money, Paulie was not going to let him out of it. In fact, had to give Paulie more money to get the bag straight.
You're only as good as your last envelope.
Cena, what was your favorite episode? What grabbed you?
I was going to say the Pine Barrens, too. I mean, it was... Well, actually, there was one that I was thinking about last night, and I looked up to see which the name of it. Mergers and Acquisitions. I think it was the best acting I've ever seen on television, because that's the one where she wants to invest in some stock. And Tony says, no, you can't do it. You can't do it. And, you know, but she wants to do it anyway. Then she finds the fingernail. So it knows, she knows that Tony's been unfaithful. She sets it next to the bed, goes to where the money's hidden in the bird food, and gets the money. But anyway, they come into the next morning. They both know. He's seen the fingernail. He knows. He's seen that she's been in the bird food. They don't say anything. And talk about the change in television. There's about 5 minutes where they're getting coffee. They don't discuss it at all, you know, because everybody knows what the elephant in the room is. And, you know, before that, nobody could ever spend that much time, even building character up, to spend time, you know, 4 minutes of silence.
Well, I think
have it be brilliant.
That was one thing that jumped out to me and Troy. It was just the characters could do it without dialogue, just the look on their faces.
Oh, yeah. That's one of the reasons I loved Sylvia so much. Because, I mean, he was just so expressive.
He'd do that shrug. He just that shrug, you know, nod his head. Yeah, that would be it. Now, the ending is controversial. The ending is I don't want to give away. A lot of characters died in the last season.
Well, I think everybody's seen it that's going to see it by this point, probably.
Well, there might be somebody out there. You never know. But yeah, so the last scene is the family is dining in a restaurant. It's slow. You think something's going to happen. Journey's playing, and it goes black. And it's debatable what has happened in it. Who wants to tackle this one first?
Well, I'll say, because we just had this debate, and I hated the ending. I hated the ending of the show. But looking back on it now, it's really quite an incredible job, because 14 years, you know, 15 years, whatever it's been since the show's been off the air, we're still sitting around asking what happened. You know, is he alive? Is he dead? When, you know, who shot, you know, if he's dead, how, who? Was it the members only guy? you know, all these kind of things. And so, you know, it's, I think it was pretty genius, quite frankly.
And that Journey song just is, you know, it became so iconic for the, you can't not think about it. That's, I liked it. I liked it because there's, what else are you going to do? I mean, everything else would have been, you know, we'd have a worse problem with it.
How about you, Millard? What were your thoughts?
Oh, hey. I mean, that's what I said when I watched that last one. I hated it. I thought that there's never been a lukewarm middle-of-the-road moment for Tony Soprano in all these years, and now they give us this.
Yeah.
I'd rather he got whacked, which is the natural life curve
well,
of a mob
he?
Boss.
That's the question
I think
here.
He got whacked, for sure.
Well, yeah, he. I mean, there was a lot of foreshadowing throughout the show.
I don't think he did. I don't think he did.
Oh, come on. I mean, him and Bobby just had the conversation about, you know, if they were to get whacked, that I bet you would never even hear it coming.
Right.
And
that's
the black.
That's a great point.
And he tells the psychiatrist in one of the sessions, he tells her, he says, there's only two, you know, trajectories for a guy like me. It's either, you know, death or jail.
And then there was an interview with David Chase where he sort of admitted to it because he had been talking about, he had been planning for 2 years for Tony's death, and it was, he was going to have him drive into the Lincoln Tunnel, go into New York for a meeting, and you know he's never going to come back from the meeting. So as he drives into the tunnel, it was just going to go black, which he kept that part of it. So that sort of lets you know that he thought, he never said it outright, though. But he thought.
I'm going to hold on to my point, but Cena, you've looked at this new movie that's coming out, The Many Saints of Newark. What's the take
yeah,
on that?
Yeah, I've been trying to look at it without getting any spoilers, because I want to watch it in a theater. I want to watch it in a theater, but it is a prequel. It's about the Moltisanti family, because Moltisanti, of course, means many saints. And so this is long before Christopher was before. It was his father who was Tony's hero, Dickie Moltisanti. And it's going to be more about him. But it's set around the time of the Newark riots, which was 1967. And this was sort of strange to me because when I look at it, you know, Michael Imperioli is my age. And I always remember that. I always remember actors my age. And James Gandolfini would have been only like five or six years older than us. And he was a teenager in 1967. That doesn't quite work with the continuity. I thought that's a little bit strange, especially when, you know, he's playing Journey songs. Like, you know,
right.
I think if he was that much older, I don't think he'd be into Journey. So, but anyway, that's the way. So it's set in 67. And what we're going to find out, which was one of the big questions in The Sopranos, was who did kill Dickie Moltisanti? Because remember, there's that episode, it was For All Debts, Public and Private, which is another one that was a big episode, I thought, where Tony, as a gift to Chris, tells him who killed his dad and lets him go kill this cop, who I never thought watching it did it. I think Tony just did that. I don't think the poor guy did it. But remember, it always stuck in my mind because they always used music so well in The Sopranos. That was one of the first times that they did music really, really well. And it was a song, sort of sounded like the Sex Pistols, but it was actually one of John Lydon's, you know, they have this punk song at the end. And he takes that dollar that he got off the guy and puts it on his mom's refrigerator. And it's the only show that doesn't go to black. It just, the dollar bill pans out.
Oh.
So you knew it was an important episode, but those questions are going to get answered. We'll really find out in the movie who killed him.
All right, Miller.
I just have one final thought on that. I think it's going to be an outstanding movie. I haven't read about it, but I have watched the trailers, and there was one little thing in the trailer. The teenage Tony Soprano is introduced to the brand-new baby, Christopher Moltisanti, which is his cousin. And he goes, he said, Tom, what's the matter? Tony, what's the matter? He goes, that baby's looking funny at me. And there's an old lady in the background. She goes, babies, sometimes when they come over from above, they know things from up there. And Tony just looks. And, of course, 25 years later, Tony kills him. So it was
it ties together to me the cat at the last episode, which Paulie thinks the cat is Chris.
Yeah.
The cat keeps looking at me.
Oh, Troy. Here we are. The first episode was January 1999. We are, you know, we are well over two decades since it started. Why do you keep coming back to it?
It's just, it's fascinating, quite frankly. I mean, and we can't lose track of the fact, taking the story line aside for just a second, I mean, the writing was incredible. The casting was incredible. The music was incredible. Everything about it just kind of fell into place. And on top of that, you know, you've got these characters that you kind of are rooting for, but you're kind of rooting against too. And so, you know, you know they're bad, but you don't want, you know, you're kind of pulling for them in certain respects because they're showing their frailties.
Well, you end up, hey, law, all the people trying to trap them, you start to root that they're going to fall apart because you don't want them to win.
Yeah, you want to keep, if they get caught, the show's over.
Miller, for you, I mean, what's, we talked about it in the beginning, but here we are 20 years later and a movie's coming out and we're all going to go see it. Why?
I think it's just not only the perfection, as best they can do it on television, it was the first, if I may say, glory days of private TV on HBO. But I just miss the company of those characters. And that may be more of a judgment on me than anything, but I just like watching it. I like the way they do things, and you see something new every single time.
And Troy, you talked about it a little bit before about how this, when the new episode came out, it was an event at your house.
Oh, it was an event. Absolutely. You got to make the baked ziti. You got to have the red wine. You got to just make sure, because now there was not streaming back then. I mean,
right.
You waited for, you know, 8 o'clock on Sunday night. I mean, and you're watching the clock and you hate it when the episode came to an end. You're like, oh, now I got to wait another week.
Yes.
Well, and then you know, just food as a whole on the show, you know, just, you craved Italian food. I did. I grew up in an Italian neighborhood in the Mississippi Delta, and spaghetti was a side dish, you know, ravioli. You went to the house and everyone was proud of their ravioli dish. Their meatballs were a family secret, you know, and so it reminded me of all that, but the food was always a big part of it.
Yeah, I always got finished watching an episode and I was starving to death, and I can trace the degradation of my physical abilities to The Sopranos.
Cena, take us home on this, on The Sopranos.
Okay.
Y'all three are continually, every time when there's a pause in the conversation, somebody's going to bring up a line of Sopranos. What attracts you so much?
Yeah, like I said, it was really the writing, and we'd never seen anything like it before. And I like that Shakespearean quality to it. It's epic. It's epic, and we had just never seen anything like it before.
Well, guys, thank you so much for doing this. I think we've got I think it was fun radio. Hope our listeners enjoyed it. We've had Troy Rafferty. Troy, thank you for coming out. Miller got to see a sunrise. He's never seen.
That's right. I haven't seen one since I was a kid, so it's great.
And we've been Cena Madison. Thank you also for joining us.
And the movie is in theaters on Friday and on HBO Max.
Many Saints of Newark. Mm-hmm. So please try it out. We'll take other topics like this, but this was fun to do. We are News Talk 1370 WCOA, Real News with Rick Outson.